Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour, our roundtable podcast about what we're watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. On this week's show, one of our favorite sketch comedy shows, Key and Peele, returns this week for its fifth season. So we'll talk about what makes it work, what's made it last, and what's coming in the next couple of episodes. And then one of the big movies opening this week is Minions, starring the little yellow dudes from Despicable Me. We'll talk about supporting critters from Minions to Ewoks and beyond, and try to figure out why some armies of babbling merchandise models become hits and some are very sad misses. And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week, so don't go away.
Be honest, are you a music nerd or a fledgling music nerd who wishes they knew more about what's out there? The All Songs Considered podcast from NPR Music is here to help. All Songs Considered is NPR's music discussion and discovery podcast. Each week, Bob Boylan and Robin Hilton share the best of the best, new and upcoming music, and lots of songs you'll fall in love with. Find new All Songs episodes every Tuesday at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
It's a week for comedy and characters, but before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And with us this week in our fourth chair is our pal Gene Demby. Gene Demby, what do you do at NPR?
I'm the lead blogger for NPR's Code Switch.
Well, it's always wonderful to have Gene with us. Now, the sketch comedy show Key and Peele, starring Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, who both used to be on Mad TV, started its fifth season on Comedy Central this week. It's got a couple of Emmy nominations under its belt. It's already got a Peabody, and we are more than ready to spend some time on it. Now, I think we have seen possibly a couple of the new episodes. The first one will have aired by the time you are hearing this show. Glenn, you're kind of a comedy guy. In general, what's your Key and Peele thinking?
I think they're great. The reason I think they're great is because each sketch combines a broadness of concept, very approachable. As soon as the sketch starts, you know what you're in for, and a specificity in detail. In other words, really good jokes. The sketch that has been shared online most is the East versus West football sketch,
yes.
Where the premise of this sketch is, boy, athletes have some funny names,
yeah. Uh-huh.
Which, let's be clear, is exactly the premise of the Abbott and Costello Who's on First sketch.
Uh-huh.
Same thing, much different in execution, but you have them come on, say their names, and those names are very, very, very funny. They're weird. That's how that works. In one of the upcoming episodes this season, there is a TED Talk where two guys get up in front of a crowd of men to talk about menstruation.
Mm-hmm.
The premise is very, very broad. It's like your woman's going to get bloated. Your woman's going to be in pain. She's going to want chocolate. All of this is very well-trodden territory before.
Yeah.
So at one point, Key holds up a tampon, asks the audience, "Do you all know what this is?" And Peele says, "That ain't space dynamite." Now, that joke made my life better. It made my day better.
Mm-hmm.
Well-trodden territory, very specific joke. Sometimes it doesn't work. I don't think that one of the sketches in the premiere, the fifth season premiere, the Hillary Clinton anger translator.
Right, which is a spinoff of their long-standing Obama anger translator.
I don't think that works because the premise is broad and the jokes are broad.
Right.
So the premise is Hillary Clinton has an anger translator, which might scan, but it doesn't, because Obama has an anger translator because he's got this rep as being cool and cerebral, and maybe Hillary Clinton could have an anger translator, not because she's seen as cool and cerebral, but because she is seen as very protected, guarded, doesn't say anything controversial.
Mm-hmm.
But the jokes don't land because the jokes are familiar. The jokes are things that people have been saying for 8 years, so that's what you need.
Or 20-plus. 20
years.
Well,
or 20
and I also think the thing about the anger translator is that the Obama anger translator works for me in part as a joke about how radioactive it would be for him to display any anger whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And although I think that for her, there is some risk, certainly, for women political candidates in appearing. People will start to talk about shrill and bitchy and all that stuff. But I think the radioactivity of showing anger is a little more specific as a joke about Obama than it is as a joke about Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the thing that I noticed when I was watching that sketch was how good Kate McKinnon's Hillary Clinton is, because it is a take on Hillary Clinton that we haven't seen yet.
Right.
And there's Key and Peele's take on Hillary Clinton is really, really, really familiar.
Yeah.
It's
and general.
And general, right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like Monica Lewinsky jokes in there, and my husband likes women. And
exactly.
It's like, yeah, we've been here before.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that particular sketch brings out when I find this show least successful for me, which is when Key and Peele, in particular, since they are the vast majority of the performances on this show, they like to play around with loud grotesques. And sometimes they do that beautifully, and sometimes, and they're both incredibly naturally funny people. So they can do loud grotesques in funny ways. But when it doesn't work, it's just loud grotesques. And so I find this show a little, I mean, it's a lot uneven. And for me, it is a perfect example of a sketch comedy show for 2015. It benefits a great deal from the fact that there are like 10 of them in a season and it's 24 minutes long. And those are sliced and diced and often chopped up and put on YouTube. And so you get something like an anger translator sketch. Luther, the Obama anger translator, has several of these, and I watched a bunch of them in a row, and I watched Luther at the White House correspondence dinner with Obama. And the show really lends itself to being seen in those 3 and 4 minute YouTube bites. And not as much as long form comedy, as a bunch of them pressed together. It is a natural for being chopped into little tiny pieces.
What's your Key and Peele take, Gene, in general?
No, I totally agree. I think they're often really, really funny. And I think there are times where there's like stretches of not laughing. And I think part of it is because you see sort of really obvious jokes. I think there's an episode coming up with a cop.
And the
whole joke is a white cop who's, I mean, he's a trigger happy white cop who's shooting at black guys. That's literally the whole joke. And it's like, okay, obviously this is like very topical. They're not saying anything about it, right?
But can I challenge you there? There is one moment in that sketch where two guys are coming out of a place with bananas. White guy has a banana, black guy has a banana.
Right.
The cop says to the white guy, look out, that black guy has a gun and he's going to take your banana. I would contend that joke makes the sketch.
And in further defense of that sketch, we laughed and laughed at that joke. That whole sketch is 2 minutes long.
Right.
And so, yeah, I agree. It's not making a whole lot of points that haven't been made a million times, but it gets in and out very quickly, which is one of the things I like about the show.
And it has a perfect button. It's terribly hard to end a sketch. Very, very hard. Usually they just end. But this has a button. The cop says, the last seven came out of nowhere. It's a good ending. It's a really good ending.
Gene and I talked a little bit about that sketch today and also about kind of the structure of their show, which seems to me to usually be they start with something normal looking, and then something massively nutsy happens. And that's the concept. Like, that's the funny idea. The same way that there's a sketch in the premiere where it's football players who are about to start a game and they're kind of going through the, you know, chest bumping kind of faux violence, and it kind of escalates. And so
a little bit.
So the structure of their sketches is usually escalate. Like, that's the structure of most of these jokes. And what Gene pointed out, what was kind of your point about the escalation?
Oh, so you don't know how this is, like, Kristen Schaal has that routine where she, like, makes a joke. They sing a song. Her and her partner sing a song.
Kristen Schaal is a horse.
Right, yeah, exactly. And they sing the song, and it's only a couple lines, and they keep repeating it. And the first minute, the audience is laughing, like, this is what? They're going to do this?
Oh, Kristen Schaal is a horse! Kristen Schaal is a horse! Well, look at her dance, like, look at her go, like, look at her dance, like a horse. Oh, Kristen Schaal is a horse!
Then by like minute 4 or 5, the audience is like, wait, they're still doing this. Then by minute 10, everyone is laughing again because they've like gone to the other side of this joke.
It's Sideshow Bob stepping on the rake.
Exactly.
It's not funny, and then it's funny again. And it's not funny again.
Right. I feel like a lot of times their skits get like minute 8 and they don't get to minute 10. So sometimes I'm like, there's another thing here that needs to like, they need to land. They just need to hold on a little bit longer.
You want there to be like another, you want there to be like a finishing level.
I wish, yeah,
either a finishing level or to cut off 2 minutes earlier.
Exactly. Right.
I tend to think Peele is funnier on this show than Key, in part because they can both do loud grotesques, but Peele does more quiet grotesques. And I think his quiet grotesques are a little bit funnier. Key can go a little bit, or in some cases, a lot too big.
They both came from Mad TV. And Mad TV, in its heyday, was for 14-year-old boys who like catchphrases and breakout characters. It is all loud grotesques from beginning to end. When the show started, I was like, they're from Mad TV. I know what it's going to be. The smartest thing the show did was change the interstitials from being in front of an audience, which were always forced, to having them just, in these last couple seasons, just two of them on a road talking.
Well, it's True Detective.
They're right. They're parodying True Detective, which doesn't feel as fresh as it did last year.
Right. Yeah, they've been doing it for a while now.
They have. But those conversations seem, I mean, they're scripted, but they're also improv a little bit, and it's quiet. It's moments of quiet amid this tumult, and I think it really works.
Yeah, I think for me, one of the sketches in the early going of this season that I really like involves a very unusual pirate song.
Yes.
And what I loved about the pirate song kind of brings me into one of the other things that's so interesting about this show, is that one of the things that's gotten the most attention about Key and Peele is that obviously in a place where Black comedians have not always had a ton of space, you know, in sketch comedy in general and all of that, that they do a lot of comedy that is specifically racial in kind of its theme or in its implication or whatever. But I always really like the fact that it's such a blend of that stuff, the cop sketch and the, which is not to say like it's entirely possible that another sketch comedy show would also wind up doing a white cop sketch just because it's so topical. Mm-hmm. But for them to be doing it, you know, there's that. They're also perfectly willing to do a pirate joke that's just a big pirate joke.
Pirate joke, right.
I once met a lass so fine, she was drunk on barley wine. I'd been to sea for months or three, I knew I could make her mine. And the lass was past consent, so it was off with her we went. And we threw her in bed and rested her head and we left, cause that's what gentlemen do. A woman has a right to a drink or two, without worrying about what you will do. We say yo-ho, but we don't say ho.
That sketch is a piece about gender in a lot of ways. That sketch is a piece about the way men treat and talk about women. They have a bunch of different ways that they like to go at things.
To your point about them playing with race, I think the stuff they do about race is, when it's good, is the stuff about sort of the way people perform race, right? And so there was a sketch a couple of seasons ago about the guys who are sort of code-switching in front of each other. Like, they're on the
I love that sketch. That's actually, you used that in your
that was like
your
in our
post
introductory
where you
post.
Explained
like,
what,
this code is what, code-switching
what code-switching was. And I think that's when I instantly got it.
But in this season, there's a sketch, the Glee Club. And, I mean, it's really well-observed, this joke, and I kind of don't want to give it away, but it's really, really smart.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just silly. The character of Brock Favors, who is the substitute traffic reporter. So they just have Keegan-Michael Key in a helicopter as like the backup traffic reporter, and then something jostles the helicopter and he just freaks out and starts swearing. It's such a silly joke, and it's literally the whole sketch is 90 seconds long. And I just laughed and laughed, and then it's boom, it's gone.
Right.
Yeah. And flipping to the next thing. The only downside, of course, of watching it on YouTube is you get that same Pepsi commercial like 700 times in ways that you don't get on Comedy Central.
Last season they had an extended sketch about an aerobics competition, which was playing off of an 80s clip that got widely shared about this very insistent music, this very, you know, cheery people dancing, and they nailed the look. That's something they often do with their cinema parodies. They just nailed the look. But it goes, as Gene was saying, it escalates to a very weird, dark place, and that's hugely important. There's another sketch coming up this season where Malcolm Barrett, who played Lem on Better Off Ted, he was on Kroll Show and Garfunkel and Oates, is on a plane and these two weird people sit next to him.
Right.
And the entire joke is that they talk weird and act weird.
That FDM Terry's is gonna try some up in here today like the bounce, boogie, and bump. That we got this on lock.
Do you mean terrorists?
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah, baby. He ain't talking about Terry Gar.
And I certainly ain't talking about no Terry cloth. I mean, if a Terry up on this plane even thinking about trying to do something, we gonna drat him up.
You're gonna what? I think what my partner's trying to say is if any Terrys come up in here, we gonna get our Bergeron.
It's dumb. It means nothing. It's stupid. I laugh.
You laugh. Did you laugh?
And the straight man you mentioned is so funny.
He's so good in that scene.
And it's one thing that I would like to see more from the show is I'd love to see them flesh out a B team.
Mm-hmm.
You think about a show like Mr. Show, which has all of these supporting players, you kind of each funnier than the next, and many of whom have graduated on to bigger things. And this really like Key and Peele are the people who are graduating out. Like, I have every single thing I have watched this year has Keegan-Michael Key in it. He's in Pitch Perfect 2.
He is
in
Tomorrowland.
He's in the last season of Parks and Recreation. He was in Fargo. I just, like, everything
he's so
we have.
Dreamy in that last season of Parks and Rec.
He is. Everything that we talk about on this show has that guy.
No, it's true.
But I wish that they were kind of bringing more people up along with them a little bit.
Yeah. They've committed to the idea that what this show is they put themselves in a situation and they go, right? Yeah. I sort of both agree with Steven that I would like to see a more developed B team and understand and appreciate that for them, they feel that like when they are working together, that's what the show is.
Right.
Anyway, well, I will be curious to hear what some of you think about the new Key and Peele and the existing Key and Peele. And you can find us on Facebook or on Twitter at NPRPCHH and tell us what you think. Now, when we come back, it's going to be a pretty hard turn. We're going in the direction of little animated monster creatures of various kinds. We're going to talk about Minions and some other stuff. So that will be after the break. We'll be right back.
Hi. I'm Melanie Green, and I'm calling from Houston, Texas. NPR is supported by Target. With the Made to Matter collection, hand-picked by Target, brands like Annie's, Method, Seventh Generation, Happy Baby, and more are just an aisle away. The Made to Matter collection is available to explore in-store or online at target.com/made-to-matter.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time to turn our attention to the Minions first. You may know that this week is when they get their own movie. They first appeared in 2010's Despicable Me and then Despicable Me 2. I think that sounds kind of funny, too, by the way. Despicable Me 2. And now they've got their own movie. It is called, unsurprisingly, Minions. I am the genius who thought that a good topic would be little armies of critters.
Critters.
And
yep.
I have a feeling that everybody else is a trifle confused, but we'll see how it goes. I'm optimistic. My top critter, Stephen Thompson.
Shucks.
Do you have minion thoughts?
Yeah, we are at a distinct advantage talking about the movie Minions in that we haven't seen it. So I'm going to assume.
I mean, right, we've seen Minions,
but we have not seen
the movie Minions.
We have not seen the entire freaking movie that they are building out of characters that go bleep 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 bleep. And now I am on record as predicting that this was going to be the second most successful summer movie of the season. I think that's pretty clearly going to be wrong unless it makes more than $450 million or however much. Avengers ended up making. I just don't see how a movie built around such limited characters is supposed to work. I tend to think of these kind of characters, and we talk about the Toy Story aliens.
Right. The little green guys in Toy Story.
The little, yeah, with the three eyes, you know, that are unidirectionally focused.
Right.
Like, imagine a movie that was based on those little three-eyed aliens. They work in animated short subjects, but not necessarily in a feature film. So I tend to think that your critters are, as we've said about other topics on this show, they're the cilantro. They are a seasoning. You bring them in for a little bit of comic relief, and then you go back to your main plot. And they're, you know, they're very merchandisable, as you said, but are they really advancing the plot?
Yeah. Can you really build a plot around Minions? What are your critter thoughts, Gene Demby? You have thoughts?
When we talked about this a little bit earlier, we were talking about Gremlins, actually, which is a movie that's ostensibly marketed at children, and I still think I have like residual trauma from
it. Because it's horrifying.
It's a terrifying movie. Gremlins is a movie about these cute little Mogwai.
Right. The nice ones are Mogwai.
Right. We've been
and
warning
the
about this.
Terrible ones, right. I was warned. Don't mix up the Mogwai.
Don't
Gremlins.
Besmirch the good name of
the good
the
name of the Mogwai, such as Gizmo, with the bad, horrible, evil Gremlins.
Right. And it seems like you can see like, okay, this is a marketing thing, right? This is like a merchandising thing. Like, oh, you have the cute animals and you have
Gizmo was marketed pretty
Pretty heavily, right. But that movie is actually pretty terrifying. And then the second movie is completely totally different. It's like a jokey.
I love the second movie.
I know.
You're talking about Gremlins 2, The New Batch, which is very topical because John Glover plays a Donald Trump-like character. And the jokes come fast and furious, and there's a lot of them that work because a lot of them are based on a love of Looney Tunes. Mm-hmm. There's maybe one too many Morton Downey Jr. jokes that don't really scan anymore, but it's a lot of fun. It's probably racist.
It's probably
thinking right now there's a whole Japanese character that I don't want to think too hard about because I'm sure it doesn't go any good places, but it's a lot of fun.
In your memory, it is
In my memory, it's great.
But one of the things Gene and I were talking about, right, is the minions are aimed at little kids, right? And it seems sometimes like these armies of critters are always something that's aimed at little kids. Mm-hmm. And in fact, this is where I break the seal on discussing Ewoks. Mm-hmm. Some of the people who don't like Ewoks don't like them because they're too overtly kind of like a little kid friendly touch on the very adult world of Star Wars.
Let me explain to you something about nerds. The thing that we love, the thing that we over-identify with, we have to spend a certain amount of effort justifying it to ourselves, especially if that thing was clearly written for children.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Even in a film that is ostensibly about the taxation of intergalactic trade routes, you got Jar Jar Binks.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So before you had Jar Jar Binks, you had the Ewoks, who are teddy bears. And the thing that that rubs me the wrong way about them is their affect, their outsize, mime-like cuteness. that is because they have inexpressive faces, right? They have to kind of put it all into their bodies, and it's all very, very puppety.
And there's that one that's so sad.
Yeah, see.
That's the grieving one.
That is a grim reminder that the entertainment that we love is for children, and we don't like that being pushed in our faces.
But like Chewbacca doesn't have a very expressive face either.
No, but he's a badass. I think that kind of makes sense.
You can be a glassy-eyed badass. Yeah. You can be glassy-eyed.
So the real problem with the Ewoks is that they're not badass
enough.
You want a more badass teddy bear.
I seem to remember that like when I was super young, there was an Ewoks cartoon. And I guess, like, the Adventures of the Ewoks spoke English, and they didn't do that weird Ewoky language thing. And they
Yum-nub.
You're looking for yum. The phrase you're looking for, Linda Holmes, is yum-nub. Here's the advantage of Ewoks over Jar Jar. Ewoks aren't racist.
That's why. I didn't sit there through their entire movie waiting for them to, like, wishing they would die.
I was going to say, it sounds like maybe Glenn did. I don't know. You don't like the Ewoks. Did you, like, cheer when the one gets it?
No, because that meant that the sad Ewok comes over and pokes him with a stick and we get more of that mimey kind of...
Like, now you have Ewoks plus sentiment.
Yes, exactly. No, thank you.
That's their big moment. That's their big moment of feeling. That's a big moment of sadness. Mm-hmm. It's so sad when the Ewok...
Teddy Ruxpin. No thanks. It's
so sad when the Ewok gets it.
Well, you brought up an interesting point. You talked about there was a depressed Ewok. I think one of the keys is the differentiation between the personalities of these little characters. Mm-hmm. And what separates, like, if you're talking about the Seven Dwarves with Snow White, like, they have descriptors attached to them. Mm-hmm. Your Smurfs are the same thing. They have, I mean, like, it's right there in each one of their names. But when there is sort of this army of... The minions each have, like, they have names. Like, one is Kevin, and one is Phil, and one is, you know...
Not the most personality-full names ever.
Right, and they look to, I mean, at least to my eyes, I'm sure for the purposes of merchandising, they have different qualities.
Oh, yeah.
One of the keys, I think, to make them more interesting as characters that can prop up an entire movie is they've got to have some personality beyond a single trait that they all have.
This reminds me of the chipmunks. Evil Alvin and the chipmunks.
No, that's true. But when you say that, it makes me think of the fact that, you know, when we were talking about whether it's possible for an army of critters to hold up an entire plot, one of the problems, even when they have differentiated personalities like Smurfs do, right? Is that it tends to then be that the whole character, quote unquote, is just that one thing.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
It's not like
Smurfette was a woman.
I was just going to say Smurfette was the girl. Like, it's not like, with the exception of the fact that I guess, like, what was his name? Hefty Smurf? Handy Smurf? There was a Handy, for sure.
Handy had a pencil behind his ear.
Yeah, okay. But there was, I think there was a Hefty, I want to say.
There was the guy, he was the guy with the muscles.
Yeah, and one of them was kind of like the dude that, like, was considered, like, more, I don't know, macho or something.
Was that Alpha Smurf?
That's right.
Douchey Smurf.
Douchey
Smurf. Broly Smurf.
Oh, wait, is there a Brawny Smurf? I was getting confused. Used. Anyway, the point is, when you get the Smurf that has the quality, like, there was Brainy and whatever, they tend to just be that one thing. Mm-hmm. It's hard to make it into a character that you would make a movie about because it's just that one thing.
Unless you get a whole passel of them and you put them into conflict with each other, and then boom, you got at least a plot, not necessarily a movie,
right?
But a plot.
Madagascar had the penguins, mm-hmm. and the penguins are little capering misfit.
Small
things that are kind of wreaking a little bit of havoc here and there. And then they ultimately got spun off into, there's like their own TV series and, you know, spin off. But like they have like fairly fully formed, like they banter. Each one has like a different goofy personality that's bouncing off each other.
Now so, you know how Stephen and I define having a soul.
The banter is key. I think tend to think that Penguins of Madagascar stuff is pretty funny.
If I can inject a little postdoctoral attention into this.
By all means.
The idea of critters has existed for a long time. Fairies, elves, gnomes, fauns, dryads, nymphs, mermaids, trolls, even hobbits, which is a very recent invention. And, of course, Japanese nature spirits are all about what? They're all about what we have lost, our sylvan past, this magical past that when we left the forest and came into civilization, something about nature was left behind, something capricious and magical. And so we impute all these motivations. We create these little characters in our heads. It's a very pagan thing to do, this idea that there are these magical spirits in the woods. It is something we lost when we embraced Christianity, for example, where the world is divided into good things and bad things. Nature is capricious. That's something certainly that the Japanese spirits are. But all of these other things, fairies, there's a reason that they don't necessarily behave according to a strict moral code. It's because they're about the childhood of man. They're about kids. Kids are capricious. Kids don't necessarily know the difference between right and wrong. That's what's going on there. In 1976, a book came out by two Dutch people, Will Huygen, and Rien Portvillet, I think is how you say that, a coffee table book called Gnomes. Do you remember this? You guys remember this?
I do, I think.
All right.
Now that you say it, I think I do remember.
This was a book devoted entirely to creating an ecosystem, an entire world of what a gnome's life is like, what their mating habits are like, what their houses look like. It was incredibly painterly, and it became this huge sensation. The reason we have the Travelocity Gnome to this day is because of this book that was a huge book back in the 70s. And it's something I poured over millions of times as a kid because it just was creating a world, a very believable alternate world where things could happen. So the one thing that I really liked about Boyhood the movie was this part when the kid asks very sincerely, so does that mean that there are no elves in the world? Because that's a threshold we kind of cross as a kid. When there's magic in the world and then suddenly there isn't, that's what we're talking about here when we talk about those kind of critters.
Huh.
Lecture over.
No, that's fantastic. Well, I will be interested to hear what those of you who are Minion likers feel about the new movie and whether you're taking your kids and going by yourself. And when we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? So we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Pamela Johnson, and I'm calling from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. We'd like to say a quick thank you to one of our sponsors, Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can avoid trips to the post office. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your computer. 500,000 small businesses already use Stamps.com. Right now, use the promo code POPCULTURE for a no-risk trial, plus a digital scale and free postage. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and type in POPCULTURE. That's Stamps.com. Enter POPCULTURE.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite and final segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
I have talked on this show in the past about my massive iTunes playlist, Songs for Editing, which is full of ambient music and orchestral music and choral music and loud, fast, but ultimately instrumental music that I feed through my headphones to drown out my coworkers, and so I can concentrate on editing. NPR Music has been pushing its staff lately to get on Spotify, you know, so that our favorite music, people can find it all in one place. And I have grudgingly gotten on that train. I never want to be the old person who rails against the new thing that everybody's doing. So I have finally gotten on Spotify. And I ported my Songs for Editing playlist over there so that people can listen to it. It is 15 hours long. Whoa. And has a lot of my favorite kind of head-filling but not distracting music, as if cued by the arrival of Songs for Editing on Spotify. Today, I got a new album, the first album in 5 years, by a band called Ratatat. It's like mellow, but zazzy, but triumphant. Kind of fun, cool, sleek instrumental music. Actually, let's hear a little bit of the song Cream on Chrome. So if you like Daft Punk but hate Pharrell, this is the music for you. So yeah, the album is called Magnifique. It comes out July 17th, but the day this episode drops, you can hear the entire thing at NPR Music.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
Two things. I am playing Batman Arkham Knight. I'm pretty far into it, and I am terrible at it. I am bad. I cannot drive the Batmobile to save my life. It is very, very hard for me. I've heard some people say that. I am also terrible at the tank combat. Now you say, Linda Holmes, you say, but Glenn, tank combat, it's a Batman game. What's tank combat doing in a Batman game?
Actually, Linda is just nodding.
And I say unto you, that is a very penetrating and insightful question that we should explore. I'm also terrible at aiming the machine gun. The machine gun, you say, in a Batman game. Another trenchant point that these game makers should think about. It's a very grim, dark, violent game. It's the last Batman game that Rocksteady is going to make, so they've really upped the stakes as much as they can. Death happens to people, for example. The thing that makes it so good is if you have the PS4 version, I believe you can download the 1966 Adam West Batman skin. So amid this dark, gothic, rusty, blood-spattered, awful place is this blue satin Batman. Right there, he's barrel-chested just like Adam West, and it makes everything better. Just makes everything better.
The white eyebrows?
He's got the drag queen eyebrows. Yeah. Yes, it's very important, and it's wonderful. So that's the Adam West Batman skin you can download for Batman Arkham Knight. The other thing is, I think I mentioned on the show before that growing up, my parents were, you know, salt of the earth, good people. They grew up not particularly wealthy, so they didn't read books. They didn't listen to music at home. They didn't, we were not a public radio house. We watched TV a lot. I was a big fan of books. I read a lot of books, and I started working at a bookstore in high school, and I wanted to be sophisticated. I wanted to be urbane. I wanted to be erudite. At one point, right before I left for college, a woman who worked at the bookstore invited all her colleagues to her house on Sunday morning for brunch, which is a very exotic thing for me at the time. Brunch. I go over, and it's the life I wanted. Her husband is reading the New York Times and doing the crossword puzzle and asking for our input, and they're playing music that I've never heard before in my life. This is the first song by this particular artist I ever heard.
My skin is black. My arms are long. My hair is woolly. And my back is strong. Strong enough to take all the pain. It's been inflicted again.
Okay, that is, of course, Four Women by Nina Simone. Now you're saying, oh, Glenn, a gay guy like Nina Simone. shocking. That story scans. That particular song builds to a very, very huge crescendo that is at once really theatrical, but also harrowingly true.
My name is Peaches.
And a lot of her music is filled with outrage and pain, but also dignity and pride. And I got none of that because my white middle class longing for sophistication was so much that I put her in this box, unthinkingly, of background music. Brunch music, for example. So for years after this, I would unthinkingly, of a Sunday morning, get the New York Times, do the crossword puzzle, listen to Nina Simone. It was just part of this life that I wanted to live. There is now a Netflix documentary called What Happened Miss Simone, which is basically about her life. There is a new archival footage in it. As it started, I realized that I had never seen her move. Because if you think about it, she became part of my life in the limited way that she did before the internet, when you couldn't just seek out archival footage or see a video, because they didn't play that on Friday night videos. They didn't play a lot on Nina Simone. So she comes out at the beginning of this documentary, and she just accepts the applause of the audience and it is a revelation. She is accepting it at once, but also challenging them. This documentary, just for seeing her in her element, doing what she does, is unforgettable, and it's really, really something. So that's What Happened, Miss Simone on Netflix.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Gene Demby, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
I want to shout out Another Round. Another Round is one of BuzzFeed's new podcasts. Mm-hmm. It is helmed by two of my very good friends, Heaven Nagatu and Tracy Clayton. It is a very funny and weird podcast. It's just them sort of having meandering conversations about all kinds of stuff. Dating and bad puns and all kinds of stuff like that.
It's Tracy who did the rundown of March of the Penguins, I believe.
Right.
And I need to hear Tracy describe March of the Penguins in great detail every week forever, pretty much.
She has this weird thing with penguins. It's weird.
Yeah. But, she has an animal thing.
Yeah, she has an animal thing. Yeah. She has an animal, Tracy's Animal Corner.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just a really funny, fun podcast. They have great guests. They've had Jean Grey, the rapper, Desus from Desus and Mero, who is hilarious. They had the First Lady of New York recently. They've had a really, really good first couple months. It's a really fun, really listenable podcast. So I would recommend that wholeheartedly. The second one I just remember this over the weekend when I was in Chicago for a visit. We're at a restaurant and we started talking to the waiter. It turns out he's in Chicago, but he's from Detroit. He's a Pistons fan and he went to the University of Michigan. We started talking and I was like, that must have been really hard. This is, you know, you're in their rivals territory. And we started talking and I remembered how good the 30 for 30 for Bad Boys was. Mm. It's this forgotten mini dynasty in the NBA. It's a team full of kind of unlikable players. I mean, like guys who are sort of, I mean, it's your Dennis Rodmans and your Isaiah Thomases. And it's Detroit is a city that had all this bad luck. And so people have forgotten for a couple years, they were a dominant basketball team and they were full of really big personalities. And this was like the little interim between Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan.
Right.
And so like no one remembers just how good they were. And they're just all really great interviews. The other 30 for 30 was on the Fab Five, which was the heralded Michigan, University of Michigan team. They were all freshmen. That's why they're called the Fab Five. They were like all highly recruited. I talked about the Christian Laettner documentary before.
Yeah, we sure did.
They were the flip side of that. There's five black kids. They sort of upend sort of everyone's expectations of our college basketball team. There's all this coded language around them. They start wearing baggy shorts. They're all bald headed. Mm-hmm. It's like 1991. It's like everyone's freaked out. If you're a kid from the inner city like me, you love them because they were like these sort of rock stars who were just like poked everyone in the eye. And they were really, really good at basketball. It's just really, really fascinating. They're all great talkers. I highly recommend Fab Five.
Thank you very much, Gene Demby. And since you mentioned a sports documentary, I feel like it's a good time to mention. All we can do is tease at this point, but we got a little show project coming out as you listen to this, coming out next week. And it involves Steven, it involves Gene, it involves sports. So just be prepared for that to happen. Making me happy this week, I spent a few days in New York over the July 4th weekend, and it was on my way back on the train that I was trying to listen to the Women's World Cup soccer. Now,
Gene is doing this thing. He's done it a couple times.
Silent clapping.
Silent clapping, and he's thunderously bringing his hands about a half inch apart.
It's not ironic like the Steve McQueen clap.
Right, exactly. It's the real clap.
Oh, yeah, Steve McQueen when John Ridley won the Oscar.
This is the most sarcastic non-clap ever. This is just silent clapping. But as you probably know by now, as you listen to this podcast, the U.S. women won the World Cup on Sunday night. And it was pretty fun to watch, although I had to watch it all in clips, because if I tried to explain to you the saga of trying to even listen to the Women's World Cup on the train, you would get very bored very quickly. So I literally, the game ended as I pulled into my apartment complex, driving myself home. So it was very gratifying, and it was lovely to see that after having earlier in the day watched, as a matter of fact, a 30 for 30 called The 99ers, which is about the 1999 team that won the World Cup. That's my other thing. And then this is one of those things where you think, I can't say this again because we've talked about this on the show so much, but when I was in New York on the last day, I was wandering around in various things and I wound up sinking into the wonderful pit that is Friday Night Lights season one. I'm here to just tell you, I know we've said this before, if you haven't watched it, it's still perfect.
Mm-hmm.
it's just about perfect. I mean, it's got a little thing here and there. They use a word here and there that I wouldn't have used. They got a little imperfection here and there, just so it's not annoying. So it's not like staring into the sun. but honestly, it is so good, and it is so satisfying.
And even if you hate sports, I say this, I hear you, my people. Mm-hmm. You got to watch this thing. Yeah,
and
so good.
I was someone who didn't particularly take to the pilot because of the structure of the pilot. There are some things about the way the pilot is built and the things that seem to be happening in the pilot that kind of made me be like, ugh. But if you stick with it for a relatively short time, you will start to see what they're doing. And I'm just saying, it's still perfect. So those are the things that are making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPRMonkeyC. You can follow Stephen at IDislikeStephen. You can follow Glenn at GH Weldon and Gene at GD215. That's GEEDEE215. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy. And you can follow our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you right back here next week.
Be honest, are you a music nerd or a fledgling music nerd who wishes they knew more about what's out there? The All Songs Considered podcast from NPR Music is here to help. All Songs Considered is NPR's music discussion and discovery podcast. Each week, Bob Boylan and Robin Hilton share the best of the best, new and upcoming music, and lots of songs you'll fall in love with. Find new All Songs episodes every Tuesday at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.